Thanks, everybody, for joining us again today on Bridging the Gap. And today, as we try to do after every regular fiscal court meeting, we're joined by Judge Executive James Anderson, who is going to share with us some of the things that went on in this most recent meeting this last Tuesday. If you're a regular listener, you'll know these typically go on a little bit longer than just one episode of the show, so we'll most likely be carrying this over into next week, into Monday and Tuesday, but we'll go ahead and start. Judge, I know that typically you guys begin the meetings with public comment, and I guess we had kind of an interesting and lengthy public comment this time. So if you can kind of tell us what we had there.
Yeah, Corey, we did. This time we had three people coming, but actually I'd like to drop back for a minute. Before we got into the meat of the meeting, we did take a moment, as most of you are aware. We did a couple things, I guess, significant happened since our last meeting, and Darrell Randall, who had been a county employee for numerous years, had retired, so we kind of done a little homage to him, as well as, unfortunately, we had lost Rog Matthews, and then also Keith Hall, who's a magistrate. His wife had lost her father, so we took a moment of silence to recognize those two gentlemen, and both were veterans on top of that, so a great loss for our community, and I did want to take a moment to let people know that we honored those at the start of the meeting.
Sure, and all three of those people in completely different roles have made our community a lot better place.
Exactly. But getting back into the public comment, the first person that had signed in to talk was Mayor Dale Allen. If you've been keeping track of the meetings over the last few months, you'll know he's been pretty much a common fixture at our meetings, and most of that has been in regards to the proposed sewer expansion. During one of his last visits, I think it was a meeting before last, he had actually, some of the citizens there had asked him for some things as far as assistance or what could be offered for people to hook on. And so at this meeting, he had actually brought a list of some help or some assistance that may be available to those people should that project go forward. So we've looked over it a little bit, and that's what time naturally the people that has come and inquired, I'm going to make a point to try to get it to them, see what their thoughts, if this changes any of their thoughts on the proposed project. So really just he brought an update in regards to that. And
this is funding assistance for the
Partial funding assistance for to actually help the homeowners with the cost that would be entailed to go online in essence. Just to name some of the things here, he was saying, I think they finally agreed that they would waive the tap fee, and they could be up to $500 to assist with that cost. It's kind of the two biggest components there. So not sure it's enough, but it's definitely a start, you know, something that those citizens had asked, and so thankful that looks like there appears, if it goes forward, that there would be way to get some assistance to those homeowners.
It does show at least that they're on the right track toward trying to make this as painless as it can be.
Yeah, and like I said before, I'm very much in support of getting our sewer systems expanded, but we've got to do so in a way that's fair to the customers, doesn't penalize them, and yet gives the community the benefit of having that expanded sewer capacity.
Right.
Following him, and kind of it's a Miss Brewer had been at a few meetings too, was Janelle Brewer with the Spark Association. Naturally, we've had her on this show as well as a few meetings, so I think most people's aware of the work her and her organization's doing and trying to help with the drug epidemic we have here in Powell County. But a couple months ago, she'd come asking for if there was any assistance that the court could offer her in regards to either space or funding, and she had kind of done a little looking around, and there appears to be a little bit of space in the ambulance building that's currently not been utilized. And she had come requested if she could use that just basically for office space. They don't have a permanent space right now, so it appears that that's going to be a real possibility for her. So barring it doesn't conflict with some of the training that the ambulance is doing, it looks like she'll have a couple rooms of that to actually give her a headquarters to operate from.
And, you know, for those who may not be familiar with why that would be a request, it's both just for any information or supplies that she needs to hold, but also for privacy.
It is, and naturally, I guess the location, the proximity to the courthouse and courtrooms and the people she works with, it would be advantageous that way. I think there'll be some definitely a chance for that to work, and like I said, it's a beyond Alf and her assistance, what she's doing, like I said, at the end of the day, it's back to good economics for the county. The more we can address and combat that drug problem, the better off it is for all of us.
Absolutely.
I guess we had one more. Our ambulance medical director, Dr. Walt Lubbers, came to the court and addressed some concerns or some things he would like to change. More things he'd like to change. He actually stated a few, used as examples, a few of the calls that had some delayed response, which that's always been a pet peeve of mine, and one, you know, naturally is respond as quick as we can. And basically he was citing, if people there listened, it wasn't as bad as you thought. He basically cited the reason for those three instances being primarily the geography or the distance from those services. So he had made some... He evidently has some ideals about adding some additional personnel and chaser vehicles, per se, to try to remedy that. And it's pretty complex, and, you know, really didn't get into it there. I really was a little bit taken back because, as I do with all my department heads, and I think, Corey, you can vouch for this, when we get into the budget season, which we just completed, mm-hmm. I always sat down with you all, asked what you think you need, you know, naturally if it's more than what you've had previously, there's some justification for it, how it's going to be funded, and do the same thing with the ambulance. So, you know, it's kind of a, I don't know if it would be him or the ambulance director, but somebody evidently, if these were things they wanted to try to address 2 months ago, would have been the time to have really brought them, not after the fact.
And, right, because, I mean, at this point, what you're saying is it definitely complicates the budget line, you know, when you're almost a full year out from the budget itself.
Yeah, and I think there must be a little bit of disconnect between him and the director, because he basically specified that he wanted more latitude so he didn't have to come before the fiscal court for things. I mean, there's only so much we can delegate, and actually, as you're aware, our department heads have quite a bit of latitude. Once we get those budgets set, we give you quite a bit of freedom in what you can do, as long as you stay within those. So I thought it was very kind of unfair to the court. Naturally, we've been very supportive. Funding to the ambulance is, you know, we're putting in pretty substantial amount. So, you know, there's always, we would always like to put more money into those emergency services and try to offer our citizens. But unfortunately, myself or nobody on the court, we don't have an unlimited amount of funds we can throw at anything. Money will fix a lot of things. And that's one of the challenges in this position, as well as if you're sitting in the magistrate's seat, you know, trying to do the best you can with the funds you have, and knowing that there is limited funds. So, you know, it's a, I kind of compared it to a child's Christmas list. I mean, you can write up whatever list, and some of those things may have some merit, but at the end of the day, you've got to be responsible, and there's only so much that can be afforded, so you don't get everything that you would like. So,
yeah, we've all felt that at one point or another in a budget.
But we had agreed to further explore it, and like I said, maybe there is definitely, we're always open to improving, and we had actually agreed to just have a special meeting or workshop to actually sit down and get a little bit more in depth into what he wanted. He kind of just shot some broad ideas out there. So I think we'll dig in. Naturally, if there's something that we can't afford, and that would naturally even take a hard look, if it's that vital to improving the service, we're always open to exploring what we can and can't do. So that'll be coming up here. I think we scheduled it for the 18th of August. So,
well, going back to the concept of chase vehicles, and you know, we do have unique geographical territory here that makes the response for any emergency vehicle different than what that response would be even in Clark County, much less larger areas like Fayette or Jefferson. And what exactly would a chase vehicle be, and how would it impact the service itself?
Like I said, he talked about it very generally, but I think his concept is that hopefully it would put personnel in closer proximity to someone who may have a call. Of course, you know, there's two sides of everything, and you start seeing basically what I see as Tahoes or like this for chase vehicles. And that was something that when I took office, I saw as a very big problem, not necessarily the chase vehicles, but was vehicles that are somewhat unmarked or can serve as a personal vehicle. And I think anybody that works for us will know that I put quite a bit of effort to rein it in those. We had a lot of vehicles that people were driving home and to other things. And, you know, in looking after our taxpayer dollars, I think we do have some personnel that it's vital that they do potentially take their vehicle home, but we got a good many others that that's not a necessity, and just being employed by the county does not necessitate that you have a vehicle to go home. And that's myself in my position. I choose not to drive if anybody. That's one of the changes I made. And, you know, we ask everybody to contribute to trying to work to save money and to be more efficient. And I've mentioned it before, I don't choose to drive a county vehicle home. And, you know, it's not significant, but any way you figure it, I think I'm saving the county between $7,000 or $8,000. That's a benefit I could choose to take, but I don't think me being elected official necessarily in my position necessitates that I have a vehicle. If I worked in any other capacity, there's many of those careers that would not offer me that. So I'm appreciative of the people giving me this chance, and I'm not going to abuse it. So, you know, some of our other elected officials are in different positions to where their vehicle is vital to their service. But in my position, I just don't see where that, and that's going kind of back. We've actually looked at all those departments. Should that supervisor have a need for a vehicle? And we've really reined that in. So I cringe a little bit here because there's always, it just opens up for potential abuse. Not that it would be, but very leery of that. So, you know, there's a whole lot of complexities that go into issues such as that.
So they would be looking at having employees of the EMS service have a take-home vehicle so that they had quicker access to.
Potentially, I guess, if they lived in the county or naturally, right. Not necessarily always a take-home, but I guess if they were in that capacity, they would have that at their disposal during that shift for sure.
Okay.
But like I said, hopefully we'll get a little bit better idea exactly what he's proposing on 18th. Like I said, it was very general.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to hearing about the budget workshop there and what comes of that. And as you said, I know you've worked pretty hard since you've been here, whether it's with ambulance service or the jail or cooperation with the sheriff's office or the dispatch to really improve our emergency services. And I think we've seen a lot of improvement, but like you said, I mean, ultimately we are a small rural county with the resources we have, and we would all like to have, you know, if we could, we'd have medical helicopters and three-story dispatch centers, but it's just not the reality.
And I guess just point two, going back strictly, and I've said this many times before, the EMS service, you know, there's always a time where it would be nice to have another ambulance on deck, but the reality is this opiate or drug epidemic is actually there again. It significantly impacts our ambulance services, and it's unfortunate that the taxpayers are on the hook for that, but that's the reality, that most of the overburden of that services comes from that epidemic. And, you know, naturally, if we had five ambulances at any given time, that would probably naturally mean that we had better services. But how much can our taxpayers absorb? And that's right. One thing in all the things we've done up until this point, and I guess kind of a chance tuck, we made significant improvements. And if people will really look, their taxes are lower, their county taxes are lower than when I took office. And with what all we've done, I'm very proud of that fact. And I'm going to continue to look for ways to be efficient. And we're not going to overburden our taxpayers if we can all help it, and especially without a proper justification to do so.
Right. And I think that's a good example. You spoke about Janelle and utilizing some of the county space for her office. It's all intertwined. So many of these things are intertwined with each other. And, you know, every person suffering from addiction that can find their way out of that is a person who's potentially less of a burden to the taxpayers within EMS and within other services.
So. It is. That's what I say. You think about it on the very simplest level there. You know, any person her organization is able to help, think how many contacts that keeps our law enforcement from potentially having to make, how many less trips maybe our ambulance service, how much our court docket could cut down. So
absolutely.
That's what I said. I've said it all along. It's not something I can fix. It's not something that the law enforcement can fix. It's going to take a group effort on all those parts, our jail and groups such as this. So I think that group effort over time, I think we can be very effective in starting to address it. And I think we're starting to see some of the turnaround with that.
Well, Judge, that's going to wrap us up for today. We thank you for your time, and we'll be back on Monday with more from the fiscal court. So we hope everybody will join us right back here on Bridging the Gap, same time on WSKV.